What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello, everyone. When looking back at 2020, it's hard to remember everything that happened. On one hand, it was a year of procrastination and reflection. With other words, our lives were put on hold. On a society level, though, it was so much that happened that it's hard to recall even bigger events and debates. One of the many storms on social media came from the arts sector, my sector, when we were told in September by the government that our jobs are not viable. If we were lucky, we managed to get another job to cover us during the pandemic. However, some people managed to stay within the creative sector, and today I'm speaking to Funcho, who managed to grow an impressive model career in 2020. Apart from discussing the problematic industry in terms of body image, we also talk about tokenism, and if there's a correlation between her fast-growing career and the Black Lives Matter movement. We talk about holding companies accountable, but also the importance of representation for younger generations. Being vocal about representation is nothing new for Funcho. She shares my passion for art and activism, and we talk about her amazing collective at Arado, London. A community for Black women and women of colour who practice any kind of art form. It's a safe space for them to share their work, and you can find links to it in the show notes. The music you're about to hear is by the wonderful Tilda Ali. My name is Fanny Beckman, and this is Women and My Generation. Hello, Funcho.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. It's really warm today.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just apologise because we're sitting in my bedroom this time, actually, and it's super hot, but I live just by a train station, so I kind of have to keep the door shut.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just had a photo shoot.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about this for like a year now.
And now it's, I think because of COVID, only now are things starting to come to fruition that maybe were planned like a year ago.
Yeah.
So it's really funny that way.
Yeah. Well, I'm super happy with the photos.
Oh, I can't wait to see them.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible because we know each other a bit from Brighton. Mm. So I took photos of you back in...
like
2016 must have been, because it was shortly after I moved to the UK,
and I was in my second year of uni and I graduated 2 years ago now.
It's crazy.
So yeah, well, I was probably like 19 or 20.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm 24 now.
So much has changed though. I just, like, when I took photos of you today, I could tell like there's a massive difference, because you were a bit like insecure back then, a bit shy.
Yeah.
But obviously now you work as a model. It's a completely different
story. Times have changed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was even thinking that. I was like, I wonder what you're thinking, like, as I'm moving around. Because I remember that first shoot.
Mm.
I literally didn't know what I was doing. I was, like, sat in the same pose for, like, 5, 10 seconds. And then I'd move. Like, it was quite static. But...
No, it's but nice. I mean, those photos are still on my website, actually.
Oh.
I'm super happy with them still.
That's good then. At least at my worst, I was still okay.
Yeah, you had it even back then. But it's funny, obviously, I just mentioned that you work as a model, and it's quite recently that you started to do it.
Mm.
And, you know, obviously, I follow you on Instagram, and I see you have different shoots pretty much every day. So.
Mm.
2020 was a crazy year for all of us, but it turned out to be a quite good year for you.
Yeah.
So how did it all start with, like, your model career?
So before COVID, I worked in a kitchen at a yoga studio. I worked at Lush, and I do it part time while I get, you know, the odd modeling gig. It wouldn't be enough to pay for my living for the month, so I'd have those side jobs. And then we went into lockdown. I literally didn't make anything. I think I made like 50 quid from selling a photo of myself in a face mask to a company. But other than that, I was living off my savings. And then I think because of Black Lives Matter, suddenly, out of nowhere, I was suddenly working like 5 days a week, sometimes six or seven.
Wow.
Just nonstop from June. When things started to open up, it was like boom, 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 boom. Mm. Like, and I also think it wasn't just because of Black Lives Matter. I also think that I had taken the time during lockdown to look into myself a little bit more, to confront things that, you know, you suppress because you're living your everyday. And I think that I was in a better headspace and had more confidence in myself to put myself out there and to feel my best. And I think that's also why I was getting the work. So yeah, I'm very, very grateful that it's all come. But that's how it went, really. Like, it went from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
Nothing really.
So did you contact model agencies, or how did that happen?
Well, I was doing it freelance for, I would say, from when I graduated uni. That's when I was getting paid jobs.
Oh, okay.
Before that, it was like hobby. You know, when we shot together, it was like the guy I was dating at the time suggested I should be a model, and I was like, oh, I don't really want to be in that industry, but I started to think, oh, well, I'll get some photos, my portfolio. I didn't mind being in front of a camera. And then it was when I got to my final year of uni, I started to get paid jobs with quite big brands. Like, I think one of the first jobs I got was with Neutrogena.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was off a Facebook group. It was like a feminist Facebook group. I don't think they have it anymore. It got, I think it was Bossy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I recognize them.
So I think they've shut it down because there was so much fighting and things on it, so they just shut it down.
Such a shame.
Because there were so many creatives on there. There were photographers, models, actors, like all women just like collaborating with each other, or giving each other jobs, or saying, oh, I've seen this job, we want to look for someone in this industry. That was one of the first jobs I got. And I got that freelance. And then I started to get other jobs freelance through Facebook groups, through word of mouth, Instagram. And then in March 2020 was when I took it all to an agency, which is my first agency. And I said, look, I've worked with all these brands. This is my portfolio. And they were just like, oh, well, you're already working, so we have no reason we shouldn't sign you.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that was the first time I got signed by an agency. It's funny as well because I've been scouted since I was 16, 17.
Okay.
And I'd always be rejected because it was either that I was too big to be a straight size model,
mm-hmm.
or too small to be a plus size model, because I was like a size 10 to 12 when I was, you know, 16, 17.
So before we started recording, you kind of mentioned that you have been, you know, told by other people, not by your agency, but, you know, doing Fashion Week and all that, that you're too big to do that kind of jobs.
Mm.
It sounds horrible.
I think I am grateful that I'm in the industry now, because if I was in the industry when I was that age, when I was 16, 17, like even up to 21, I don't think I would have been able to hold my own as much as I can do now, because you put things into perspective, you realise that they're judging you on the surface, and I know there's a lot more to me than just what I look like.
Yeah, of course.
And so, yeah, I'm very, very grateful that I'm able to distinguish between, you know, a surface comment of, well, we don't want to work with her because of how I look, rather than, oh, we don't want to work with her because of who I am as a person.
Yeah. But what do you say when you get a comment like that?
You just have to laugh it off, because again, like, at the end of the day, you realise they don't know you. They just see you as, you know, what they see straight away. And it is difficult, I think, in the industry as well. You get rejected so much. You get rejected 90% of the time, 95% sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You only see the 5% that I get. So I might apply to loads of jobs, do tons of castings, and get like one. But that's all that people see, and they think, oh wow, like, it must be so easy. I'm like, nope, Yeah. Like, you get rejected every single day, and I think you understand that as a creative, that you get judged on your art.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it sounds a bit weird, like, when you say, oh, I'm judged on my art as a model, because you kind of are, because I am my parents' art, in a way.
Oh, so, that's beautiful.
Yeah, their art's always getting judged. The way that I model things always getting judged. So, yeah, it's like things that, you know, you put your heart into, or there's more vulnerability there.
Yeah.
But yeah, you build a tough skin.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like, in terms of my art, like, again, people only see what, you know, all the yeses that I get, but, you know, the amount of emails that I send, most of them I don't even get a reply to, or like, we'll keep your details for the future. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Literally, you just have to assume, okay, so they haven't replied and it's been a few weeks, so I haven't got that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's exactly how you find out. Mm. But
we'll just keep writing and writing and writing.
I have got like a little, what's it called? The template that I just like copy paste and then do some adjustments.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, okay, let me just bang this out. Just send them to so many people and then you might get one back.
Yeah.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God, I know that feeling too well.
Literally.
But you mentioned a bit briefly now that you've been thinking about if your model career took off because of Black Lives Matter.
Mm.
Is that something that you think a lot about, like, in terms of the fashion industry or the beauty industry now? Or do you think that's an issue? Because I feel like it could go either way. So obviously, it's a big issue with tokenism. And but then also it is really important with representation of various people. And I think it's just from where I'm sitting, I feel like it's the intention behind it. Is it just for commercial purposes that they know that the brands know that this will sell, or is it actually them rethinking and doing the work and understanding the importance of representation? So I would love to hear your opinion about this as
well. Well, I think we have very similar opinions on this. I think that, I'm in a few mindsets. I think that it is the intention, and mostly, you know, fundamentally, the intention is to make money. And so if you're going to think on a fundamental basis, then no, like, it's not looking out for the people. It's thinking, okay, right now this is fashionable, or right now people are trying, you know, starting to be aware of different races, ethnicities, genders, religions, sexualities. Let's get that in our marketing, because that will sell. Like, before it was, oh, people want to aspire to be really slim and tall and have abs and all this stuff, and so that's what they would put in advertising. But now they realize, oh, that's not going to sell, so we have to do something that is more relatable. So yeah, if I was going to say fundamentally, I think that no, the intention can never be like so kind of ethical, or so like, what's the word? It can never be justified as having like good intention when they do this, especially the big corporate companies who, yeah, they might put a brown person in their advert or a black person, whatever. But then if you look at the root of where their product comes from, it's like there's child labor involved Africa or Asia or whatever. And so that's the thing that it makes me laugh. Not in a, like, just in the way that you're like, how can we just watch that, see, oh, there's a brown person, we feel represented, but then if you go to the root of it, we're not really. We're still suffering. I do think, however, it does make an impact. As I think about it in a way that I will do what I can in my bubble, my sphere, what I can do. And if me being in an advert can, you know, a little girl can see that, or whoever, and go, oh, wow, like, that looks like me, or like, my hair looks like that, or whatever, like, something that means that they can relate to what they're seeing, then it means that they are given more confidence to be in that world, or to aspire to do what they want to do. And I remember myself, I never saw anyone with my hair when I was younger. When I'd see people in adverts that were mixed race, they would always have straight hair. Or you wouldn't even know they were mixed race, because they would kind of like change them or make them look like very Eurocentric, very like more white.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I also think that there's an issue because yes, although I'm in these adverts and I work in this world, it's like sometimes I'm the darkest person there. And at the end of the day, I identify as black by Islam mixed race.
Mm.
And so I still have that heritage that means that I'm in closer proximity to whiteness, which makes me more palatable.
Mm.
And also, like, I don't know if you've seen adverts recently, but mixed race girls are everywhere on adverts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's crazy, like, how that's happened. And part of me thinks, yeah, I'm in fashion, but the other part of me thinks, well, you know, if they're gonna give me money for this, it's like I'm consciously knowing that they're using me, but I'm also using them because I need to pay my bills.
Yeah.
And also, if I get the money from this, then I can invest it and actually do what I want to do, which yeah. is exhibitions that help promote black women and women of colour's art.
Yeah.
So that's my my take on advertising at the moment.
Mm. I love that you said that you are using them just as much as they are using you. But also thinking about like representation, I know you've spoken about this before. I'm thinking about the Sainsbury's Christmas ad in December and how much comments it got, like a lot of negative comments but also positive because people could finally relate to that advert. And you've spoken a lot about Black Lives Matter when it kind of was reborn last summer. So you educate mainly white people, I'd say, on how to be better allies. So, for example, what books to read. I know you had a video about that. But then I'm also thinking that a lot of black people said it's not on us, it's you know, there's all the resources out there, black people have been loud for centuries, it's not our job to educate anymore. So what are your thoughts on that, because you decided to actually create these educational videos?
Yeah,
what made you do that?
I think that it is because of my close proximity to whiteness. Like, half of my family are white, my mum's side are from Liverpool. And there'll be certain comments and things that they would say, and you know, when I would go up north to see them, but they wouldn't know because they've not been exposed to, you know, black people as much, perhaps, or if they have, then there's not been so many that they're questioned about their actions.
Mm.
And I almost sympathise with that because I realise that a lot of the time you are a product of your system, of your environment.
Mm.
And so there is only so much you can learn within your kind of your sphere. You can Google things, yeah, of course, and I think in one of my videos I probably say you should Google it, but I think at that point I was at this, you know, I was at the point where I was like, I have the energy to explain these things, and I also want to make this more accessible to people. And I know that people are more likely to watch me because I'm a bit more relatable to them or in closer proximity to them.
Mm.
Because I know there was another girl who was making videos and she was darker skinned, and it felt like she wasn't getting as much traction.
Really?
Yeah, I could see that, and it's like, well, she's putting this work in and... Mm. I know that she's not going to have as many people watching it because perhaps there are audiences that are more open to seeing her, but then there are also people who just haven't been exposed to that, and it's a new world, which is weird to think, because I'm from London and half my family are black as well, and so it's like, that's so weird that people don't just see, you know, a human speaking things. It's what they're more comfortable with. So yeah, that's also one of the reasons why I started.
Do you know this other girl?
I can't remember her username. No. I don't want to. Yeah.
No, of course. Hmm. Yeah, it's just, yeah, again, we are in this bubble, you know, in London, but then you do realise that it looks completely different elsewhere, and how many different opinions are out there, unfortunately. But what kind of reactions did you get from your videos?
It was a lot of people thanking me for doing them. There were like a few questions, more questions that I got. Some of them were a little bit tiring, so I did choose not to answer them. It'd be like in the DMs.
And so could you just explain with your own words what it is you're talking about, just to make sure that everyone is...
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. So, as in what I spoke about in the videos.
Yeah, because there was quite a few different ones. You had different topics in every video.
Yeah, so in the videos that I did, it was quite, you know, simple ways to integrate Black Lives Matter into your everyday life and things that you should... you know, you should think about or you shouldn't say, or like different videos on, like I did one on the Sainsbury's advert that came out, that there was a black family and there was uproar about that. So a lot of videos to do with, yeah, black people and how we can understand the lived experiences of black people and just be better humans. And also I went at the angle of giving questions rather than just telling you what you should do in some of the videos. I think that we underestimate not only do like people educating underestimate others' intelligence, but we underestimate our own intelligence and we feel like we should be spoon-fed information. But if you just ask the right questions and get someone to think about things, then most of the time they do come up with the right answers if they're open to it enough. So that's the angle that I went at.
Yeah, definitely. It's so good that you had quite a lot of people who viewed it that normally wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that was your aim, just listen to you now, that you wanted to educate those people. And you spoke about your family in Liverpool and how you would talk to them, maybe, so having that in mind as well. I think that's super powerful. But you also briefly mentioned now your artist group and how you both do videography and photography yourself, but also you create this safe space for other black women and women of colour to exhibit their work. So just tell us all about it, please.
Oh, yes. So I have a platform called Atarodo, which is a platform exhibiting art by black women and women of colour, just because I was looking at the statistics of these women in art galleries and commercial art galleries as well, and it was ridiculously small. Like it was really, really small, and it wasn't even proportional to the population, which was really concerning to me. I think it was like in American galleries, it was like hardly any women, and the percentage that were of colour, it was like Asian, like East Asian. So yeah, I was like, this is a problem, and I want to try and solve it in any way that I can. The thing with the art world is there are definitely gatekeepers. I find that because of it's quite elite, and it's very hard to get in. So that's why I created Atarodo, because I wanted to just have a platform where I make it and I run it, and it just means there's a space where if you've never done an exhibition before, or you just want to have your art seen for what it is, because I find that often if there is like a, you know, token black artist or brown artist in an art gallery space, automatically their work is feminist, or it's you know, about their race, but yeah, those things are definitely integrated in naturally because they've made the art. But I just wanted it to be like, okay, so all these women are from, you know, minority backgrounds, and all these women are women. Like, now you can look at the art knowing that, but now try and look at other things within the art. Maybe they wanted to show you something else. So
definitely. This made me also think about, like, I listened to a podcast the other day, Great Women Artists, with Gorilla Girls. There was like the two of the founders were there, and they've been doing it for like 35 years, and, you know, also questioning, especially in America, the representation of both women and women of colour. And it's crazy. It's absolutely insane.
And I really admire you for, you know, identifying the problem, how difficult it is to get into exhibitions, but instead of just being, you know, negative about it or not really knowing how what to do next, you actually created this space yourself, which is really cool. And you did manage to have an exhibition, and you're probably planning to have more, I assume.
Yes, I mean, I've been stopped a few times because of COVID. But yeah, I had my first exhibition back at the beginning of 2020 in January, and I remember when I went to get the space, she was like, oh well, we'll give you this space for a discount because January, the first week, usually people don't want to go out and they're tired because they've been celebrating Christmas and New Year. And I think that's one of the most packed she's ever seen in that place.
Really?
It was jam-packed. People were standing at the door. Like, it was probably one of the best nights of my life.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I'm so, so, so grateful that was the reception for the first one. And so it makes me very confident for the next ones when they do happen. But yeah,
how many artists were there?
There were 13, I think.
Wow.
And then we had 12 performers. It was either, I think 13 and 12. There were 25 artists in general. So there were, we had comedians, poets, singers, and then we had the art on the walls, photographers, and I just put that on the walls, and then had a night where we had performances as well from those women too.
That's so cool.
So,
if there are anyone listening to this now and they want to get involved, how can they reach out to you?
So if you want to get involved with Atarodo, you can email, so hello@atarodolondon.com, or DM on Instagram, @atarodolondon. At the moment, I'm currently in the planning stages of trying to get an exhibition going. Might collaborate with someone else, because I think that would really help too. But if you even want your work to be featured on our page, because that's something that I need to get back into, is the social media, because I find that the modelling has taken over as the full-time work, and so I found it really difficult to keep up with putting stuff on Atarodo, but that's always been the passion. But yeah, my social media is a little bit slow, so it would actually help me if I was to get more emails like, can I just put this on your page? I'd be like, please, please do. So that is how you can get involved.
Perfect. I'll put a link in the show notes as well.
Amazing.
Because I really, it's something that I've been thinking about quite a lot recently, you know, the power in collaborating with other people, because as an artist you can get really lonely as well, and I just personally feel like if you have more people involved, you get new perspectives and new ideas, and you will just create even better things together.
Oh, for sure. And I think that you all fuel each other and you uplift each other, because you know where you're coming from. Whereas if it's like you alone and you're facing, like, you know, maybe a big company or something, it's not going to have that same effect. Whereas, yeah, it does create that community.
Yeah, definitely. But in terms of your own artwork, do you have anything you're working on right now?
I had this question asked to me at my first exhibition. They were like, oh, you do photography, why don't you put something on the walls? And I was like, I don't want to put my own stuff on an exhibition that I'm curating, because then I feel like, oh, either, you know, I'll put something on the space in the wall and they'll be like, oh, she put it in the best space. Or like, I can put my thing on the floor and they'd be like, well, she's done that because it stands out on the floor. Like, I feel like I wanted to concentrate on the curation and not take anything away from the artist.
Yeah.
In terms of photography, though, that's something as well that I really want to get back into. I started a project back, when was it? I think it was in my final year of university. And it was the post-colonial subject, and I photographed my dad first, and then I just didn't continue it. And I think it was when my camera lenses got stolen, I kind of felt very, like, disconnected from photography, and I was like, oh, like, I have to buy all these lenses again, and so that put me off a bit, but I really do want to get back into it and show the world that I have another aspect of my creative personality.
I think that sounds like a really interesting project, because, you know, the projects that are really personal, that's, the, you know, the most emotional, I think. And I tried that last year, actually. I took photos of my mum for the first time, and it does something with the dynamic when you take photos of your parents. So I, you know, not just the end result, but I think for you as well, it must be really interesting, you know, the process itself to take those photos.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And you kind of put your, I put my dad in a different light as well. And yeah, seeing him as his art is really, yeah, really interesting. I'd love to continue the project, definitely. It was, how long ago has it been now? It's been a while. I'll get back on it.
Yeah. I mean, you did post on social media the other day exactly what you said now, that you want to show other sides of yourself, not just a model career. And I think a lot of people would be interested in that as well.
Yeah, I think I definitely got lost in my work over the past probably nearly a year, I'd say. I look back at myself during the first lockdown and during June, July, like those summers, and I saw someone who was a lot more open and showed more aspects of their life. And I just want to get back to that because it feels more authentic to me. And I understand, like, you're posting things on social media, it's always going to be for others to see. And so there's always an element of showing you the best parts of my life, which, yeah, I will, because that's what I want to do. But yeah, I just want to be more it sounds weird, but accessible, because I find that I've had messages from people and it's felt like I'm like a celebrity in a way, which has been very strange for me. Because I don't see myself on any pedestal at all. I just think that my circumstances combined with my drive and my effort have meant that I'm able to be in the place that I am today. But it's not without the, you know, the lows and the things that aren't so modelly too.
I yeah, going back to the post that you wrote about, you know, changing things up a bit on your social media, I really liked that you were so honest about, yeah, this is just me, you know, on, out shopping or whatever, but of course I chose the best photo myself. And that's so true. It feels like that explains the world we're living right now, because sometimes I feel like that myself, that I never put out on social media if I'm struggling, or, you know, what we talked about earlier, that I never write about the no's I get from different companies. But it is really valuable, because when I see other people do that, it means a lot to have someone saying that as well. So I think I need to get better at that as well and be more authentic.
It takes a lot. Yeah, I think that there are more people showing those sides of themselves. It's still always going to have some element of tailoring, of curation, because you'll only share what you want to share. But it does make it a little bit more realistic. It's like, I do go on Instagram and I like to go on it to see people being happy and everything. But I don't want people to also forget that everyone's human. And like, we can have that in the back of our head and know that, oh, yeah, everyone's human, they probably have bad sides to their life and things like that. But if you're just seeing the good stuff, sometimes you forget that there's also the not so good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I sit here and I'm thinking, I mean, you did mention it a bit in the beginning that you've actually, you worked a lot on yourself in the beginning of the lockdown, and it feels like you're a very confident person. And obviously Women of My Generation is a lot about women talking about their body image, but also how can we prevent the younger generations from struggling with their self-esteem, or people our age who are still struggling. Do you have any advice on how to improve your relationship with your body?
I would say, one, don't get into a relationship until you have a healthy relationship with your body, because you could potentially rely on the other person to affirm you, or you might also, the opposite might happen, where they might make comments on you and how you look, and because they make those comments and judgments, you're not able to see yourself in a great way. Like, if they say negative things, you're going to be like, oh, well, yeah, maybe my body is like this.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that it's important, like, for us, I know that it's difficult, but the people who do have that kind of body confidence to just post or to just be themselves and to have other people see themselves just doing that, and like, you know, posting things that don't have filters on them, and just little things like that make differences. If you see someone and they don't have like tons of makeup on and they're just themselves, it can also encourage you to be like, oh, well, I can look beautiful just without having anything on too.
Yeah, definitely.
Doesn't mean like you makeup is bad, you know, it can enhance things that you like, and you can be super creative, but like it depends on the reasons that you use it as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, 100%. We're just way too harsh on ourselves. We will never talk to other people the way we talk to ourselves sometimes.
Yeah, like that's another thing that leads me on to another point, is like, speak to yourself like you're your friend and not your enemy.
Mm.
Like, if you have, just say that you were your best friend. Like, if you saw it on the outside, like, how would you speak to your best friend? You wouldn't say, oh, like, you've got so many rolls here, or you need a toned stomach.
Imagine.
Yeah, like,
cut them out of your life
completely. Literally, yeah. And so imagine you're then saying that to yourself. That's not right.
No.
So I think, yeah, see yourself as your best friend rather than, like, your worst enemy.
Definitely. I think that's a wonderful way to end this conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for taking part. I really enjoyed hearing all your different opinions and your perspective on everything.
Oh, thanks for having me as well.
My pleasure.